this sounds obvious because everybody says move fast. Everybody says move fast. But in reality, you could always move faster. That's what I learned. I'll give you another example.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Scaling DevTools, and I'm joined today by Glauber Costa, who is the founder of Terso, which is a brand new database company that has been taking the internet by storm. Great to meet you, Glauber. Thank you for joining.
Likewise, it's a pleasure to be here.
Could you tell us a bit about Terso?
Terso, easiest way to explain, Terso is essentially SQLite for production. SQLite's been around for a long time. It's one of the databases, I guess, that people trust a lot. It's one of the databases that people play with a lot. You always see SQLite in every tutorial. You see SQLite in every getting started. You see SQLite on mobile. You see SQLite on your toaster. Your watch probably runs SQLite. I mean, so just really this database that is everywhere. I think web production workloads are a little bit more complex than that. So a lot of the things that make SQLite so great for those use cases, like the fact that it's just a file, like the fact that it's very simple. It's not that they are shortcomings for the web workloads, but you need to build some more. You need to build like more infrastructure to make that usable and to make that a good choice for your production workloads. And that's essentially what we're doing. We have a fork of SQLite called libSQL that we announced in October 2022. And then Terso is the meta service that we built after seeing how much interest libSQL gathered in weeks, really.
That's really interesting. I think I used SQLite. It was like one of the first ones databases I used with Rails. I think it was like used to be the kind of default option. I don't know if it still is.
I've seen someone on Twitter the other day say that SQLite will be a lot more successful if it didn't have Lite in the name. But keep in mind, it was created 20 plus years ago. So 20 plus years ago, it really was a database that could be used only for small things. But the hardware advancements that we had in the past 20 years are fantastic. But the human workloads didn't grow that much. So there are workloads that are growing exponentially in terms of data. And it's usually like things that have a timestamp attached to that, like machine events, generated events. But things that humans do, which is a large portion of the web, it didn't grow that much. I mean, if you had a product catalog 10 years ago, it would be more or less the same size today. Like maybe it grew from 5 gigabytes to 10 gigabytes in size, and people think it's a 2x factor. But that's nothing. You have USB sticks today for a couple of bucks on Amazon, not AWS, the actual Amazon. They can buy and there you go. Like you got a terabyte of storage for nothing, right? Just annual, just attached to. It's not a database that is only for small stuff anymore. Clearly, it's not the database that is going to be used for the petabyte scale and the most challenging, like Google scale, Facebook scale workloads out there. But it's good enough for the web. It's good enough for most companies. It's there are many companies that are running their production on SQLite. And what Terso wants to do is just to make this more common, more flexible, easier, more doable in general.
This episode is brought to you by WorkOS. At some point, you're going to land a big customer and they're going to ask you for enterprise features. That's where WorkOS comes in because they give you these features out the box. Features like SCIM provisioning, SAML authentication, and audit logs. They have an easy-to-use API, and they're trusted by big dev tools like Vercel, as well as smaller, fast-growing dev tools like Nock. So if you're looking to cross the enterprise chasm and make yourself enterprise-ready, check out WorkOS. We've also done an episode with Michael, the founder of WorkOS, where he shares a lot of tips around crossing the enterprise chasm, landing your first enterprise deals, and making sure that you're ready for them. Thanks, WorkOS, for sponsoring the podcast, and back to the show. I know Jamie is working with you now, who's been on the show, and I've seen some of Jamie's tutorials he's putting out where it's like he builds a database for like everything. It's like every customer has their own database. And that seems like quite a when I saw it and like scrolling through Twitter, I was like, what? Like every
what?
Yeah. Yeah. Could you talk a bit about that?
So as I was telling you before we started recording, I'm very flattered with the fact that people think we are around for a lot longer. But Thurso is actually today, as we're still in February, this is our first anniversary. So we launched a private beta just for a select few people in February last year. And then we launched a public beta. We never officially GA, but like, let's call it that point, like a, maybe the best way to describe it is like we didn't have any monetization, so it wasn't GA yet. We launched a public beta in June, and then we started charging people in August. So again, Thurso is a very, very new offering. And one of the ways I explain what Thurso is that instead of thinking it's a database, you can think of Thurso, which it is a database, but if it helps your mental model, you can think of Thurso as a web server, right? So you can send HTTP requests to that, and then there is a SQLite file in the web server. So you send your SQLite requests through HTTP. It's the only protocol we support for network connections. And then we give you the responses back, and there's a SQLite file there. And there was really only SQLite file. So every VM that we spin had a, for every customer of Thurso has their own infrastructure. So you spin a VM, there's a SQLite file there. And we would let you spin three VMs for free because we wanted like a, from the start, we knew that a good strategy would be very generous with that. And we can talk more later about what allows us to do that. But okay, you can get three small VMs. And then you have three SQLite files, you have three databases. Or because one of the things we were doing a lot was replication. So you can either have three independent databases or you can have a database with two replicas and, you know, however you want to spin this. But people kept coming to us and asking us. So again, this is something that we heard from the community. And look, I want to clarify that at that point, we were already quite successful. So we were having users, especially how early the service was. We were very happy to see the reception. We were very happy to see that we hit the right note. But people kept coming in. The one thing they asked the most, like the one feature request that we heard the most is, okay, if you're based on SQLite and SQLite is just a file, why can't you let me create like 10,000 files? Short, right? And then we figure out, look, it needs some changes to the architecture, right? Because we had this very simple thing. There's a web server serving a SQLite file. So we changed the architecture. So now you have routes, and then each route is essentially routed by the database name. Each different database name has its own SQLite file. And then in September, I mean, we are one of the things I'm super proud of is that we're shipping extremely, extremely fast. So again, remember, August is when we started charging people, like having the scalar plan. And in September, we had a launch week where we announced that now you wouldn't have three databases on the scalar, on the free tier. You would have 500. And you wouldn't have six databases on the first paid tier. You would have 10,000, right? So this is, I think, what, you know, everybody fell in love with. Yeah. That month that we announced this, we saw 300% growth in weekly active users in the platform. And we can do this once more because every database is just a file. If you are not using that file, it doesn't use any resources, right? So the file is just there sitting in the file system. A lot of things that databases have to deal with is exactly like provisioning resources, destroying resources, scaling to zero. Like SQLite does all of that very naturally. You have this web server, and then you can have 10,000 databases sitting in the file system of the web server. If you have a request coming to the database, you serve from the file. If you have a request coming to the other database, you serve from that file. Not using, not pay. So that allows us to be very efficient with what we offer.
Yeah, and I'm going to be asking a lot of questions from my friend Joe from Delaware. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Joe from Delaware. How's it doing?
Who actually also said that I really should ask you on the show. So yeah, big shout out to Joe. So he was actually asking, like, how come your free tier is so generous? Like, how does pricing work? So it feels like kind of a good segue into that. Yeah.
So I think, first of all, we are shipping very fast. As I said, I think this has been so far critical and crucial for the success that Thurso has enjoyed and hopefully will continue to enjoy. But our costs are now much higher than they should be, because with a couple more changes that we plan to make at some point, I can put all my free tier users in the same web server, right? And just allocate databases for them. And this would allow us to be even cheaper. Now, we're not there yet. So what we have at the moment is that we have essentially VMs, but those VMs are fairly small. And we scale to zero those VMs very aggressively. Actually, not that aggressively. But if you don't use the database for an hour, and here, after just a clarification, after this thing about now you can have 500 databases on the free tier, that means if you don't use any of them, so if you don't use any of your databases for an hour, we'll shut it down. When a request comes, we wake it up automatically, and then it just has a little bit more latency. I don't love that model. Again, I think with SQLite, you could have something that really is like fully serverless, just file-based, but it's where we started. It's where we are today. And I think we're going to move to a model that allows us to have an even lower price point. But here's the thing, like we offer so much exactly because we can be very efficient with how those resources are being used. SQLite is a very efficient database. That is why we picked SQLite to build our previous product. And then again, we forked it and we saw the reception. We decided to completely pivot the company. But it's probably the most efficient database there is. It runs on toasters. It runs on smartwatches. It runs anywhere. So it uses very little resources to do what it does. We don't have a complicated Kubernetes infrastructure. We don't have any of that. We just have a couple of VMs running web servers. So it's very cheap to operate. Being very cheap to operate, it is very cheap to, we can pass that along essentially as free tier. Now, storage, I think we overdid it a little bit. I think we're not going to backtrack now because, it's not worth the, but on storage, I think we overdid it a little bit. But the reality also is that it's a power law. We offer so much storage for free, but very few people actually use it. Most of our users don't use all the storage so that's part of the reason why we don't backtrack on that. First of all, it's just like, hey, look, let's be generous and it is what it is. And we're going to work to reduce those costs in other places. But also people create those databases and most of the web workloads are not that big. So you come and you use maybe a gigabyte, 2 gigabytes, 3 gigabytes, and we offer you 9 gigabytes. So some databases actually use close to that, but most don't. And
do you have to think about like, not just like in terms of the cost and stuff, but like if you're trying to get people to like upgrade and you're providing like so much, is that something that's?
Yeah. So absolutely. My previous company, I wasn't a founder. This is the first company that I founded, but I worked at a startup before that for 8 years in the database space as well. It was an open source database called Scylla, which handles, the opposite of SQLite, the petabyte scale, the incredibly high volume. Scylla was an open source database. So you always had, we always had that issue when selling the database. Yes, we want to make money, but the reality is that the open source is so good that some people just use it. You just use the open source and don't pay us because again, the open source version itself was extremely high quality, extremely trusted. It would run. It was good enough for most people. So you always have that issue. I don't think this is an issue unique to Thurso. Every database will have that. Every open source project will have that. You want to make the most because you know that at the end of the day, your community growing is the most important thing there is. That's why we take VC money because you want to accelerate that process. So you want that community growing. But you want to create a pipeline of people who are actually sustaining the company. So this always exists. This is not a problem that is unique to Thurso. Yeah. But look, our free tier is very generous, but our scalar tier is even more generous. and we're gonna be launching a new plan in next month. That again, it's gonna be even more generous.
Even more generous.
And then what we try to do is that we will add things to those plans that are not related to the amount of requests that you do, but are related to the fact that you are doing something with that that is more serious. And I'll give you an example. On the free plan, you have your database is associated with your GitHub account. And that's it. So if you are a person that is doing like your side project, if you are a person that is really just doing something simple, that's good enough. But the moment you are doing something more serious in an organization, you want other people in your team to have access to manage this database. And this is not available at all in the free plan. So again, the free plan is how you, I understand why so many indie hackers are flocking to Terso. Again, because the limits that we offer and how generous the plans are, but you are at that point, like just yourself. So that's fine. But small companies, they are already a little bit different. If you're a small company, maybe you don't hit the limits even on the free tier, but you want other people in your team to have access. So you pay the $29 a month that we have. And our new plan, we haven't announced pricing yet, but it should be announced in a couple of weeks. We'll have SOC 2 compliance, we'll have HIPAA compliance, we'll have a lot of the other things that like people in larger organizations may want. So that is one of the ways to do it. Because look, most of the time when you're dealing with a vendor, it's not just the service that you want, it's the relationship with the vendor, right? In case something goes wrong, is the help, is the support. So you aren't able to charge for those things that are not really just a request. And the good thing is that our higher up plans, they're fairly high margin, right? Because again, the cost of actually running the service is very low.
That's really helpful. Hopefully, that answered one of Joe from Delaware's questions. But the next one, I think this is a really good one. So Joe thinks that your CLI is really good. And I've tried it as well, and I agree. It's like you kind of, it walks you through. Well, what I can say is most CLI kind of like quick starts, I get stuck on something and I'm like, okay, I did something wrong. I need to go back and see where did I do that. And it's like, you have quite a lot of steps. And I think there's maybe one that I was just being silly, but there was like super good for like in terms of how fast it is to get running. And this is Joe's question. How did you build like such a kind of good CLI experience?
Time for the truth. Because half of it was intentional.
Okay.
The other half was an accident. It was a happy accident. So let's start with the intentional part. If you look at my background and if you look at my co-founder background, we're not web developers. We work more or less together, a lot together by the end of the period, but more or less together for 10 years in the Linux kernel. And then we joined a database company, which again was a very backend oriented, high, very specialized NoSQL database, not something the web developers are usually reaching for. And for another 8 years. So, and this is my career. That's it. Like those two things. So, we really like are CLI people, right? So just that's the first thing. Like just, we're not very comfortable with graphical interfaces, with web interfaces as the founders. So like if I was building a tool to appease a developer like me, it will be a CLI tool, right? So that's thing number one. So I think this is the intentional part. We said, look, we understand this. It was a risk at the time because the biggest thing that I thought is like Terso is very oriented to web developers. Will that crowd even like this? Maybe they will just say, hey, there's no, and there were a lot of people in the company thinking like that. If there is no UI, people may not use it. So it was a risk. So we figured that how do we balance that risk is by making that CLI as good as we can. So we come from this background, we use CLI for everything. And we knew that we needed to make it as good as we could if we were not to have a UI. Now the accidental part comes from this, from the fact that we didn't have a UI at all. Right. So that is the part that we didn't necessarily intend. But as I alluded to earlier, this company was doing something else. For around a year, we were doing something else that was also targeted at front-end developers or application developers, more correctly saying. In just so the audience knows how related it was, it was essentially, we didn't want to be a database company. That's not the play that we wanted. So we were not positioning this as a database, but it was essentially a way to do like global persistence from TypeScript. So you write your TypeScript, we will try to figure out which SQL queries could be used to store the state that you were referring to in TypeScript. So we had a compiler that would do this for you. And then we had SQLite that we planned to run on the edge. And the idea is like if you're deploying a global application, then you can just go in without worrying about SQL, just by writing TypeScript, you get your stuff there. And as I mentioned, we put this fork of SQLite called LibSQL out in October. We were using SQLite and we were a little bit frustrated with that. So that's why we put the fork out. As we saw the reaction to the fork, we said, okay, I think we're better off just pivoting the whole company. But here's the thing. We had already spent, and this previous product, because it was designed for front-end developers, we spent a lot of money by hiring people, hiring developers, hiring agencies, et cetera, to have a fantastic UI. So we had this very beautiful UI with a product that nobody used because we didn't get a lot of usage from that product. We were hoping we would, so it was not something that we were giving up on. It was, again, early stages, like, oh, we've been doing this for only a year, that's fine. But we started from this mindset because we're targeting this web crowd. We need to have a UI that is visually stunning, that is very nice. That's how most products are. So we pivot. and we find ourselves in the situation that, look, the market is terrible. That's just reality, right? It's just this was like the end of 2022, beginning of 2023. There's a crisis. Everybody's laying off everybody. All the big companies' valuations dropping by half. So we understood that we didn't have a lot of time. That's one I think that like they said, okay, so we are essentially burning 1 year of money by doing this. It was a hard decision in Celica and going to start again from scratch. How can we win? And we understood that the only way of winning is like we had to move extremely fast. So this thing that, like I said, we're very proud of doing this because we understood that this was the only chance that we as a company had. And if you building a UI is not the way you move the fastest, right? So the CLI allows you to move a lot faster because it's a lot easier to change. It's a lot easier to evolve. So in December, we decided, like October, we released the fork. In December, we said, hey, look, I mean, just this is it. This is nothing. This is just a fork that we announced and didn't really do a lot of work. And it has more GitHub stars. It has more people talking about it than our previous product. So our previous product had around 1,000 GitHub stars after a year, which again, it's not bad. Starting to see like the first production users, not bad. Maybe we were in the beginning of the curve. But LibSQL had 1,500 GitHub stars in 2 weeks, right? So we figured, okay, this sounds like a lot more explosive than what we were doing before. And we were not just in the mode of building a UI because we're thinking, look, it's just this will delay us putting this out there in the market. So it has to be CLI. So that is the part that I think was accidental. If we were starting this today, maybe we would have gone in the traditional thinking of, well, the UI is the most important thing. So you need to build this very, good UI, very intuitive UI. But we were not going to do this. So we knew it was going to be CLI. We understand CLI very well. And we understood that like all of those PLG things that products will put in the web UI, we have to find a way to put them in the CLI because we want depth. We want the good quick start. We want to guide you. We want to show you the features, but we can't do this in the UI. So we have to do it in the CLI. So it was a little bit of like I think us being having the right background to do it with the fact that because of, macroeconomic reasons, we would not be able to meet the milestones that we wanted if we were building a whole UI before we put the product out.
That makes sense. That makes sense. You kind of used your skills, used your natural kind of mechanism, and then also...
I'm happy people loved it, because again, that was a concern for us.
Yeah.
Lots of people were fairly concerned so just about, does it even fly? Will people use it? Will people adopt it? And in fairness, we heard a lot of early feedback in the feedback forum that we needed a UI. So look, we did it. And in August, we put the UI out together with the Scalar plan. So I think today, a lot of people are using Terso through the UI. But once you start doing like a good CLI, you kind of want to keep the momentum, right? So like we keep investing in the CLI. It's still, there are a lot of features for us that we do CLI first and don't expose in the UI. Again, because doing a CLI first allows us to iterate a lot more rapidly. But we have a UI today. And we also want to, of course, it's not that I disagree that the UI has to be polished and et cetera. As I said, I think if you were starting today without the money constraints that we had and without the time pressure, maybe we would just have taken longer and built a good web UI from the get-go. But we didn't have the choice. And then we said, hey, look, if it's going to be CLI only, it better be the best CLI experience you have.
When you say about investing, because I feel like it's obviously that like you're good at it and you've done it in the past, but like I feel like you also probably spent more time than most companies thinking about this stuff. Like what, if you want to like make your CLI better or you want to add something, like how do you make sure that the kind of quality is there?
I don't know if this can be explained. I think a lot of that is just like you've done it so much and you understand like that the functionality has to be there.
Like taste, kind of.
Look, you can book a meeting with me through our CLI. Right? You can leave feedback to Terso through our CLI. So it was really, I think a lot of the times and as I said, maybe this would have been how we would have landed in a different universe. You believe that your product has a UI, and then the CLI is a way to automate some tasks, is a way to get some stuff done. But for us, the CLI was how you use the product, right? So we had this thing that like everything that you could possibly want to do must be doable by the CLI. All of those PLG mechanisms that companies put, like for example, and we wanted in the beginning. Now I think we focus a lot more on just like a 10,000 database per user, and etc. Because it's been more successful. In the beginning, we focused a lot on data replication, which was something unique that SQLite didn't have. We still focus a lot on that. It's just that this other use case is slowly overtaking replication as the main reason people come to Terso. So you create a database. And look, I don't want to wait for you to go to the documentation. I don't want to wait for you to hear about the fact that Terso has replication. I want to show you right there, right? So in an onboarding process on the web UI, this is how it would happen. Like you would log in and then you create a database. Now, do you want to create a replica? So we wanted to bring all that experience to the CLI. So that's what we did. It's like we had this understanding that this cannot be a slice of the product. This is the product. And I think just going in that mindset helps a lot, right? Because now we don't have those excuses of, this is really not a good path for the CLI. Your thinking is, I need to find a way to make that flow make sense in a CLI. And there you go, right? You look at other companies, for example, I met with Fire, they have a CLI, which is a way to create a project, is a way to get started. Like once you do that, like this, usually that's it. I mean, that's the role of the CLI. But for us, the CLI has to do everything. There are some things that don't really make sense on the CLI. So those are web only. Like, for example, when you create when it's time to swipe a credit card, you have a Stripe integration. There's no way you can do this on the CLI. But the CLI will take you to the web page. I mean, you can start the process on the CLI. But we're always thinking whatever is doable on Terso has to be done on the CLI.
Yeah, that's okay. That's cool. You're like, did you ever see that Justin Kahn, the one that founded Twitch, and he was like, was like the wearing the live stream thing before, and then it was like, I don't know, kind of somehow feels similar that you're just like, you're so CLI, like it's good because you're just living and breathing it and putting it.
No, I got fairly involved in the CLI in the beginning myself. And one of the things that I was doing a lot was exactly just those kind of onboarding mechanisms. Right now, we created our app, we created a database. Now it's time for you to create our app. Because so I got very personally involved with that. And I think another thing that helps as well is that from beginning, we wanted Torso to be API first. We actually not even CLI first. So our CLI was also very simple because most of the time what it's doing is calling a bunch of APIs, right? So this is one of the things that Jamie's been doing very well is showcasing the platform API, not by accident. When he joined, I did tell him, like, this is the main thing that we should be talking about. Like, you know, he's doing this very well. So you can create databases, you can destroy databases, you can manage your users, you can manage your tokens, you can do all of that from the API. So the CLI is really, it also makes it simpler to use it, to code it.
Yeah, it makes sense when you put it like that. One of the things that I kind of wanted to circle back to that, as you were speaking, just you were talking about like kind of the economic climate and stuff like that. And I wonder like if part of the reason that Torso is like hit home with people so much is that like you're able to do it more cost effectively at a time when people are like being more cost effective. And it's like something that I feel like doesn't get talked about very often among dev tools. Do you think it's been a factor?
Maybe. It's hard to say, right? Because look, if we were in a different macroeconomic environment, we would just have kept the free plan, like a free only offering for a lot longer, right? So that's the thing. Like we had to start like putting plans and putting some restrictions quite early on. I think because of that, in a different world with the ZERP world, of no interest rates and free money, I think we would have had the luxury of just being growth mode only free for years, which is what a lot of companies did, right? And no, I don't know. It's hard to say. I think that, yes, there's a lot of people that flock to Torso because of how generous our free tier is. But what we notice from this crowd is like, that they wouldn't be paying a lot for other services anyway. It's mostly like solo builders, free side projects, and etc. But we actually get a fairly decent amount of
I was gonna say, like, in their head, sometimes like maybe that is like they don't probably think of themselves as like, okay, yeah, there's no one using it right now, but like in a year, it's going to be hundreds of thousands of people. Yeah. Torso is going to be cheaper.
What I mean is that like the kind of applications that this crowd built, and it's definitely the crowd that adopted Torso the first and like from the get-go. If it wasn't for Torso, maybe they would be paying like $5 for another solution, and for Torso they could get it for free.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not because the workload doesn't demand that. It's not something that you're paying thousands of dollars a month. Now, today I had a call. Again, we were a lot more mature. So we had a call with a prospect that's spending $8,000 a month on their database solution. We believe we can do it, you know, two or three. So it's a big saving. Now I think those things start to become more of a factor. Mm. But in the beginning, like, look, is the difference between $0 and $5 that much? You know, at the end of the day, people want it. People ask for it.
Yeah.
But if you really have no option, and if you have to just pay $5 to use a service that your side project depends on, you pay more than that for Netflix. So it's not a big deal. And people end up doing, like, my wife runs a side business, and she pays like $20 a month for a bunch of tools that she uses. Like, it just doesn't need a database.
Okay, but I was going to say, is Torso part of that?
No, just that she does it completely. She uses like Adobe stuff and et cetera.
Okay.
So she pays for those tools like a small amount. All of those companies and all of those offerings would have starter tiers and things for hobbyists and, and et cetera. So is the difference between 10 and zero that much? I mean, not necessarily. So I don't think that was a major factor. But again, I think the fact that we can, due to our cost structure, just offer this at such a low price, of course it helps adoption. Of course it helps adoption. Yeah. But I don't think this is because of the macro environment. Like, because interest rates are zero, I'm not zero now, I have to stop being five, or I'm going to spend zero. This happens, maybe it's going to happen more now. I mean, it happens more at the later stages, where you're really talking about a $10,000 bill, right? Just or a $5,000.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like it could be because, like, I'm in like the kind of like a lot of the indie hacker Twitter. I see like so like Levels.io, you know, like the like a lot of what he talks about is like how his costs are like really low and he's got like a really simple stack. And
Levels.io makes millions of dollars a year. I mean, like,
And he's still like, he's like, and I spend barely anything on, you know.
But look, zero, that's exactly my point. Zero and $10 doesn't really change its cost structure.
But maybe it's like where you kind of know, like, okay, as it scales, if it's cheap now, it's going to be cheaper.
Is Levels.io, and that's, I think, the central part of my point. Is he doing this because that's how he operates, or is he doing it because of the macroeconomic environment? He's not doing it because of the macroeconomic environment. Right? So just
that's true. He's always been like that.
That's exactly my point. Like the initial crowd that came to Turso, and of course, I'm very happy about that. I fully acknowledge. I think the fact that we could offer so much for so little, right, was definitely a factor. But is it because of the macroeconomic environment? No, it's because that crowd already has that mindset, and they would have paid $5, but like zeros even matter. It's just.
You're probably right. Yeah, it's interesting though. I still think it's very interesting.
Well, people talk a lot. I think in this community, people talk a lot about, oh, how much can I do with a $5 VM on Digital Ocean?
Yeah, it's versus, kind of like it's fun to talk about. Like, you know, build it. Everyone loves it when someone can build like a $1 million startup with like $200 a month.
Yeah, as high margins as it can be.
That's the dream. Yeah. Glauber, I think that's all we've got time for. But the last thing I just wanted to ask you is if you've got one kind of takeaway that you would give to other DevTools founders, early stage employees.
Move fast. Yeah. Again, this was the saving grace of Turso. As I said, the reason this sounds obvious because everybody says move fast. Everybody says move fast. But in reality, you could always move faster. That's what I learned. Because you have those thinkings like, I'll give you another example. For launch, we were saying like, we're going to offer you, you know, 10 billion rows read per second, per month, and that's free. But we didn't have the backend infrastructure. And I spoke about that in a different podcast as well. We didn't have the backend infrastructure to stop your reads or even track your reads at the API layer. We just did not know. Right, just how many reads you are doing. We consider a delay, and we had those very aggressive timelines. So I started to see chatter inside the company, or maybe we should delay the launch because it's going to take us this much to build this. And then we thought about it, and I think we got very good at doing this here at Turso. And we realized, wait a moment. What happens if we just don't build this? What happens if we just don't do it? Well, people will want to know, right? We're saying like we're going to charge you per rows read, and people will want to know how many rows they read. Sure, but you can actually get this from the client, because you have the data. The CLI can just connect to the database and ask how much you read. And this is super trivial. You can do it in an hour, but we cannot know, and we cannot block you. So our thought process at the moment is like, how many people are going to complain if I promised you a billion rows read per month, but you were able to do two? And we understood that the number of people would be zero because like you complain if the other, you know, if you were complaining the opposite direction. Right? You promised me a billion and then you locked me out after 500 million, you complain. But like if I promised you a billion and if you did 10 billion, who cares? Right? So in the name of shipping fast, we said, don't do it. Like just don't do it at all. Right? So there are, and the CLI is another example, right? So I think a lot of people have this understanding that, which is the right understanding, our product needs to be polished. Our product needs to be loved. And then because you have this mindset, you end up taking a lot longer to ship, because you have your idea of like what the product, polished product is. But because of our time pressure, we had this thing that we knew that if we didn't put something polished out, nobody would use. But we also were forced to think of other ways of making the product polished that wouldn't sacrifice the timeline. We discussed the web UI example at length. I just gave you another example about the restriction on Rose Red, and I could probably give you 10 more. All right. So we kind of got very good at adopting this mindset of like, okay, really, what is the minimum thing that we need to put out there? Let's put that minimum thing out there. And look, it served us wonders. People are still surprised that Torso is so young, and we are already like punching way, way, way above our weight. The service got a lot better, but also the service got a lot better in the right way because we didn't build a lot of useless stuff because there was a product out. You were hearing from users from day one. As an example, like the 10,000 database, this is what I want. This is what I need. This is what I would like to do. Right. So like, again, sounds obvious, sounds something like that every startup founder will say, every startup founder will hear. But I think the way I would put this advice is like, no matter how fast you think you can ship, you probably can ship faster, right? So once you think about it and you're designing your way, like, this is the fastest, ask yourself a little bit more, okay, but is this an even faster way? Like, where can we scope this in a way? Like, what kind of creative solutions can we have to ship it even faster? It pays off.
That was great. Yeah, that's really good. I feel like I need to reflect on myself. Thank you. That was really good. Glauber, thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure.
If people want to learn more about you or about Torso, where should they go?
So first of all, there's not that many interesting things to learn about me. Definitely don't spend too much time on that. I am GLCST on Twitter. I spend a lot of time there. So definitely, get in touch. I'm also on the Torso Discord server all the time. It's just, as I said, I had a very boring career. So, I mean, there's not a lot about me that I believe people will be interested at. But if they, Torso on the other hand is the other way around, they definitely recommend people get to know about Torso. We are at torso.tech. So definitely take a look at that. You will find there the link to our Discord server. Our Discord server at the moment has, I think, way over 2,000 people. Again, we're also on Twitter all the time. We have a great documentation that Jamie is spearheading at the moment. And look, any questions you may have, just ask on our Discord server. We will be happy to help you.
That's awesome. And I have heard that you are very open and responsive. That was that's what I've heard, is people can just DM you.
I try my best.
That's awesome. Thanks, Glauber.
My pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.